Hey guys, it's Manish here. I hope everyone had a good 420 and a great 430. The episode you're about to hear today was recorded on Monday night, right before we got the historic DEA news. But it is a discussion about the risks and upside, the risk reward of the industry and the coming catalysts, including rescheduling. And in the coming weeks, we're going to be having a lot of conversations about what's next, what this means, and where the opportunities are. But this episode about the good, the bad, and the ugly, I think was a pretty interesting conversation and funny to listen to after the announcement. So please email us what you want to hear more about and enjoy this episode.
You're listening to the Cannabis Investing Network. Before we begin, a short disclaimer. The full disclaimer follows at the end of this episode. This podcast is a general communication and is being provided for entertainment and information purposes only. It is educational in nature and is not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment strategy, plan, feature, or other purpose. Please enjoy responsibly.
Hello and welcome back to the Cannabis Investing Network podcast. My name is Manish, and oh my goodness, do we have a really fun episode for everybody today, because we have a fantastic individual joining us. Everyone has been wondering where this gentleman has been, but he has been extremely busy. Everything from convincing the U.S. government to ban TikTok, to writing stablecoin legislation, to inciting rap beefs between Drake and Kendrick Lamar, all while traveling to New York for presidential jury duty. Guess who's back? Back again. Yes, he's back. Tell a friend. Welcome back, the one and only Abby.
What's going on? Manish, I gotta say, that was, first of all, very incredible intro. Thank you. The one thing I realized during your intro is I have been so out of touch. Out of the four analogies that you used, I knew maybe one of them, and that was the TikTok ban.
Well, we're gonna get you caught up to speed today, buddy. Welcome back.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Yeah, for those who have missed me, the one person, I Heart Matthew Perry, username, that was their username, the person who did miss me. Yeah, I've just been head down working on a couple things, and unfortunately have not been able to keep up with cannabis, and I'm very excited to kind of come back, chat with you, get brought up to speed, and just learn a lot more, man.
Well, I guess, first of all, tell the people where you've been. What have you been up to for the past couple months?
Well, the TikTok ban was really difficult. I had to type some words on a piece of paper, and I've been busy. So I think the last time I was on here was in November.
December.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so December of 2023. Mm-hmm. I had recently purchased a house, and for anybody who, you know, understands how difficult it is to purchase a house in this market, the house that we bought was brand spanking new at 68 years old.
Nice.
So it needed a lot of work, and I had to roll up this.
Still too young to run for president, though.
That's actually true. That's I didn't even think about that. That's pretty funny. But no, just had to roll up the sleeves, and you know, I've been getting a lot of the renovations underway, which it's a lot of fun. It's a tremendous amount of work. But I've learned a lot about just renovation stuff in general, and you know, taking the same approach that you and I took to cannabis, which is like, okay, like, you know, we're value guys, we're deal guys. We, you know, if the price is X, we want half X, right? So just a lot of time had been invested into just understanding sort of how like the whole renovation, contractors, electricians, plumbers, all that fun stuff, how fragmented the market is. I'm quite convinced that they're all colluding, because you get five different quotes and they're like within 10%, not even 10%. They're within like 5% of each other. And then you go to a different jurisdiction. Like you just go just slightly outside of wherever you're looking. And then all of a sudden it's like a different, completely different ball game. And you know, technology sort of helping, but you know, all that, that's been one part of it as well. Work's been keeping me super, super, super busy. And then, you know, I'm recently married as well. So, you know, Yeah, exactly. So just keeping the wife happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or trying to, at least.
That's right. That's right. Well, look, I think it's a good opportunity today to play a little bit of catch up. We're in a really interesting point in the cannabis markets because 420 just passed, and there was a lot of expectations built into this time period about big catalyst changes coming. So I'm going to use this as kind of a nice benchmark from the last episode you and I did, which was at the end of last year. We did an episode called The Game Plan for Cannabis Investing in 2024. And today we're going to talk about what's happened since then. And we're going to talk about what the kind of updated game plan is for this year. And, spoiler alert is I think there actually is a really nice opportunity brewing. So I'm going to talk about what I've done since then, where my portfolio's at, what I'm kind of planning for. And then the theme of today is really the good, the bad, and the ugly of the cannabis industry. So I will provide the good and the bad, and Abby, you will be the ugly as usual.
Yeah, I'll put a screenshot up so people can be like, oh my God, there you go. When you were saying spoiler alert, I thought you were going to be like, safe still hasn't passed.
Yeah. that's a safe bet, but yeah,
there you go.
That's an easy one. So look, let's get right into it.
Sorry, but before you continue on there, I was going to say we should probably add, and I can add color to this for sure, just sort of a macro update in terms of interest rates.
Absolutely.
Starting to see, yeah, at the very end, if we have time, let's pop that in there and just, there's been a lot of volatility in that. And I think that that's impacted not necessarily just cannabis, but like other investments as well. And, there's been, going back to Alan Brockstein's analogy of the casino, there are different games at the, on the casino floor. And, all games have been impacted by it. So it's worth chatting on.
Well, part of when we talk about, reviewing, just to looking back at what's happened so far, a lot of it is talking about what's happening outside of cannabis as well, right? So, just to your point, to go back to start the year, when we started the year, let's say when we finished 2023, cannabis finished the year off in a little bit of a red space. Enthusiasm had died down. We potentially had these catalysts coming our way, the big one being rescheduling, but it didn't feel like anyone was betting on that or banking on that. It didn't look like it in the stock prices, at least. From a macro perspective, the bond rates actually finished the year pretty low. So the bonds were kind of the lowest they've been in quite some time when we finished the year. And of course, that's the cost of money, right? So that was the expectation was that, hey, when we started the new year, we've got rate cuts on the horizon. So that means at some point in the year, we're going to see rate cuts. People at the time were thinking it would be April. But if not April, it would be June, right? So people were a little too optimistic, but at least the direction would be positive. Hey, we're finally going to have some rate relief as opposed to these really high rates that we've had. And to start the year, actually both in cannabis and on the SPY, we had a really positive start. So to talk about cannabis, to start the year, we had this really kind of strange nothing burger article about the DEA confirming to a congressman who was inquiring about rescheduling. The DEA basically just said, I think in a letter, that we confirm we're reviewing the HHS recommendation and we're working on it, right? Which is not at all new information. I mean, it basically was just a regurgitation of what we already knew. But what was interesting is that the news around that somehow, for some reason, caught fire. And it brought a lot of new eyeballs into the sector, new year, new me, ready to make, new poor decisions. we grabbed a bunch of those people. And to those of us who've been in the space, we were kind of like, this is a nothing. This is, I'm great to see people looking at this, but this doesn't mean anything. And so it was a lot of what we were used to, which is, oh, a nice pop, and then, people selling into it, right? And what happened, though, is that over the next couple of weeks, we got a series of positive developments, some new, some not, that just kind of kept snowballing and dominoing and created what ended up being something like a 50% increase in MSOS over the first 4 weeks. which obviously is a huge move in only a month, but it was also not evenly distributed. I mean, some of the smaller names really took off like a rocket, and there was just a huge bounce off of what ended up being, at least for the time being, a bottom. And that was an incredible start to the year. And now, just to put it in context, the S&P actually did really well over that period too. It had something like a 5% increase over that time period. So yes, cannabis massively outperformed it, but the backdrop was that it was a very favorable risk-on environment where people were getting excited about rates coming down and money was piling into a lot of different names across the markets.
Yeah, and I think it's important to talk about that, like Q1 of this year, the first 3 months, the market, like the broader market, just sort of being on fire and risk asset, like being full tilt in terms of risk asset. And it was all because they were starting to see that inflation numbers were coming down, the economy was starting to show cracks, the Fed was coming out with the stance that, okay, it's going to be higher for longer, but we're probably not raising anymore. And the market took that to, you know, what it always does as, oh, he's cutting rates, right? Or Powell's cutting rates. And we saw something crazy happen in the first two months. You also did have gold prices skyrocket. And that's because there was a lot of geopolitical tension that's been sort of happening. And then, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I'm a gold expert by any means, shape or form. I have no idea why the price of gold went to what it did, but it was hitting all time highs consistently, right? So you were seeing sort of all across the board, just every single market like go on fire. And then going back to cannabis particularly, so you add that backdrop, then you add in the whole HHS memo, all that fun stuff. And then you add in the Twitterverse of people saying you're never going to be able to buy MSOS again for less than $10 or $9 or whatever. And I remember reading that tweet and being like, this person is they're very opinionated. And I told you, I think it was like after all this sort of stuff starting to die down and the, you know, MSOS sort of ticking below, it was like, I think it got to like $8 or something. I was like, all right, man, I'm going to pick some up here. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, why not? Because this, to me, that was like the gimme, and yeah, it hasn't worked out yet, but it's only been 2 months.
Well, and I just want to backtrack on something you said there, which is about, you know, the market being on fire and, you know, inflation and things like that. Well, I think it's actually been a little bit of two different stories, right? To start the year, I think we had a little bit of a sign of, hey, inflation is moderating, still coming down, not as nearly as bad as it was before. And more recently, which we'll get to later, I think that story started to change, right? So I think at the beginning of the year, there really was more optimism around the fact that, hey, the economy has not cracked. So, you know, people, depending on what industry you're in, people talk about it being a recession or not being a recession. Or you know, I can tell you from a real estate perspective, there was a lot of talk around, hey, right now you're in the window of opportunity. Once these rates start coming down, then prices are going to go back up again. So if you want to cut a deal, you know, now you have a little more opportunity. But, you know, what I would put an asterisk to that is that prices didn't really correct all that much over the last 2 years, right? If you told me that interest rates were going to double, I really would have thought there would be more severe price correction, which there really wasn't. You know, it was some of the froth coming off, which was healthy, some amount of pullback, depending on what asset class you're talking about, with the more speculative asset classes like land taking the biggest hit. Other asset classes like industrial actually probably improved pricing or held pretty steady over the last 2 years. So it really is a mixed bag. But I think there was just a tremendous amount of optimism at the beginning of the year, which I think has died down a pretty decent amount in the last few weeks. And one of the things that we haven't talked about yet is that we actually saw the IPO window opening up a little bit.
Yeah, we did.
And the prime example of that was Reddit, right? Reddit is a stock or a company that has looked at going public for quite some time. And finally, this year, they managed to find that window. And I think on their opening day, they were trading up like 20% from the high end of their IPO range. So it just goes to show you that the market really did find kind of the sweet spot in the beginning of the year. And again, not just cannabis that was sort of, I think, trading separately, but a lot of other asset classes trading quite well. And as a reminder, I mean, Reddit only IPO'd I think in the kind of end of March. So it's still a relatively fresh story.
There was one other thing in terms of, this is more specific to the Canadian markets, transactions that happen within Canada. Mm-hmm. This year was a really weird year where you didn't really see bank-led transactions. So what I mean by that is like other, you know, Schedule One banks or bulge bracket banks like TD, BMO, CIBC, et cetera. And then when you go down to more of the independents like Canaccord, Echelon, those banks, nobody really put up a deal or did a transaction for like the first 3 weeks of the month, or sorry, 3 weeks of the year, which is really unusual to see because in 2022, January 2022, there was a lot more transactional activity. So, you know, it kind of like that early on when we're talking about, you know, you saw asset prices sort of re-rate, the conversation did shift at that time to like going from a soft landing to a no landing type scenario, right? Where it was like the recession's kind of done. But you didn't see the bankers kind of come in and start putting up these deals, to your point. And then the IPO window sort of opened up afterwards, right? So that was just something unique that I noticed.
Yeah, and I think to that point, like, it's still not easy to do deals, right? Even in this,
no, it's
even,
super difficult.
Even in that, in this kind of more exuberant market, it still was very picky. And I think there was a bit of a formula. Like, I think Reddit as a deal worked because it was kind of a household name, and retail investors or traders knew the name and were interested in getting behind it. So it still was very limited in terms of what could IPO, but it was interesting after a year of seeing almost no IPOs to see one happen and get over the line. You know, there's a couple here and there, but that was just a sign of the times. And just going back to that January run that we had, one of the things that happened was we kept getting like hit after hit in terms of, you know, catalysts coming our way. So for example, as the hype was dying down around, you know, this rescheduling non-news, we get this Freedom of Information Act. Matt Zorn, he's a lawyer, he sues the government about the HHS memo, and boom, HHS releases the entire unredacted recommendation to reschedule to Schedule 3. And this is the first time we're seeing in writing the government basically admitting that cannabis has medicinal value, right? So that you know, it basically it gave us another, just more rocket fuel to keep the ship going, right? And it got people really excited. And one of the things that we cautioned about at the time, I did an episode at the end of January with MJ Stock Trader, and one of the things we talked about was that there was just a little too much excitement. I remember at the time, people were literally saying, okay, this is the weekend or next weekend. And like, people were really latching on to the idea that it was going to happen very, very quickly. And I think they were setting themselves up for a lot of disappointment. And then, you know, just as that kind of hype wave was dying down, a news article comes out where Don Murphy was asking questions to Ron DeSantis. Remember, Ron DeSantis was running for president at this time. And Ron DeSantis asked him, about Florida adult use being on the ballot. And Ron DeSantis said, oh yeah, that's going to be on the ballot. And that became a news article, not only in cannabis, but in Florida, that became quite a big news article. And so suddenly we're all excited again, right? And this added another just tool in the toolkit of optimism to say, ooh, there's a big catalyst potentially coming. Now, again, we knew that there was going to be a decision coming, but this was the first sign that it could be a positive decision in our favor for the April 1st deadline. So then people started talking about Trulieve and Ayr and Verano and the upside potential of Florida, which is absolutely enormous. In fact, Nick Astovich and I did the quarterly review last episode, and I was talking to the people and I was listening back to it, and I was probably too conservative on how much upside there is in Florida. And how much upside there is in Trulieve. And I think...
Spoken like a true cannabis investor. I was too conservative. I said it could only 10x from here.
If there's any mistake I made, it's that I left too much money on the table.
Yeah.
But I think the point just being that is an enormous, enormous potential catalyst, right? But this is kind of part of the theme of this episode... The hard thing is how to quantify and bet on these binary outcomes, where if you hit the catalyst, you know, the potential upside is enormous, right? We can quantify it and we can say, hey, there's a potential, you know, 2 to 3x, let's say, in some of these, you know, numerically, fundamentally. But if you don't hit it, then what happens, right? And it's hard to quantify the downside, but it seems like it could be pretty bad. And that's, I think that is the core challenge of what we're trying to deal with as cannabis investors, is to look at this and say, there's obviously some juicy upside here if these things hit, but if they don't hit, then, you know, it's hard. It's clearly there's a lot of downside there. So it really just becomes a game of how much am I willing to risk? Am I willing to gamble? How much do I already have in? And if the time is right, am I ready to move? How much am I willing to move? And what do I buy?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not an easy question to answer. It's something that I'm going to talk about a little bit later in terms of what I've mapped out. But it's really the core problem that I think a lot of cannabis investors are facing right now.
I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, every single question that you sort of asked hypothetically there is extremely difficult to answer, right? Because for me personally, I would just stay with the quality names. But, you know, I'm sure everybody has their own strategy that they want to use.
So look, moving forward, you know, now we're sort of to fast forward a little bit. So we've gone through, you know, various iterations through the month, but the interesting thing is, you know, today, which is April 28th, end of April, we're still ahead in terms of stock prices of where we were at the beginning of the year. And for some of the smaller operators, we're significantly higher than we were at the beginning of the year. Now, the interesting thing is, so if we fast forward, for example, to April 1st, cannabis ends up being on the Florida ballot, right? Mm-hmm. And that was just a fantastic shot in the arm for everyone. Everyone's got a little more pep in their step. Everyone's excited about the potential of that outcome. But the funny thing is, the share prices of the Florida operators, like, let's just take Trulieve as you know, being the most primed for that opportunity. It's actually lower today than it was right before that decision came out.
And sorry, say that again. The price for Trulieve today is less than it was, what, March 31st?
The price of Trulieve, exactly. So the price of Trulieve today is below where it was essentially the day before that news came out. And I'll actually map it out for you. We were around, you know, $16-17 Canadian right before the announcement came out. And today we're $14. So, you know, I don't know, what is that, 20% below where we were at the time? So it just, logically, that doesn't really make sense, right? So why is that? I think there's a couple of things. I think that you got a lot of pull forward of demand in terms of, you know, the share prices started incorporating and front running this catalyst once we got that news. And so, you know, Trulieve was maybe a bit of a laggard through the January run. Once that news hit, it just took off like a rocket ship, right? And you started baking in the gain of hey, this is going to be on the ballot. And that, you know, to your earlier point about, you know, the FOMO and wanting to get in, it's like, hey, if this gets on the ballot, like this thing's going to take off like a rocket ship. But that didn't happen, which is a bit surprising and really counterintuitive. I think the other thing that's happening is that with these big binary events, okay, what happens is, you know, we get very excited about it, but then you start seeing pieces of news or you know, polling or other information that makes people think about the downside. So, for example, Ron DeSantis has come out multiple times now against this amendment, talking about why it's bad or why voters should reject it, right? And he is, at the end of the day, still a popular governor in Florida. So he definitely has some influence in how voters think. It's not the end all be all, but, you know, it's definitely not good when he's out there bashing it all the time, right? The other thing that happened was people started to see polling where, I think if you heard people talk about it, they would always say the polling was in the mid 60s. Which just didn't seem right to me. You know, if you look at Ohio, it passed with about 57%. Now that was, you know, not in a presidential election year. So, you know, it's a little bit wonky. But at the very least, you know, it's going to be a fight. You know, it's going to be a really, really tough fight to get 60%. So as you see polls come out that, you know, put it at 60% or a little bit less, then people start to realize, hey, it's not a done deal. There's still uncertainty here. And then that dampens the enthusiasm for it, right? But that being said, just kind of jumping ahead to the, you know, some of the what I consider the good, you know, getting on the ballot to me was this really big uncertainty because we have no transparency into the process, very similar to the rescheduling process with the DEA. We have no transparency at all into it. So the fact that we're on the ballot, now it's in the voters' hands. Now you have a fighting shot of getting 60%. And my hypothesis is that as we get closer to that election date, you know, investors and traders are very narrow and narrow-minded and short-term focused. When you're getting very close to that election date, I think you're going to start having that excitement again. I think you will start to see some polls, which make this, you know, more of a front and center issue. And I think that, I don't know what will happen on, you know, November 7th or 9th or whatever it is, but I think at least you're going to have some cyclicality around this leading up to that date. So the Florida-focused operators, I think they will have an interesting trading opportunity as we get closer to the election date.
Yeah, well said. I mean, I guess you're basically saying that you see volatility sort of pick up as we get closer to this potential catalyst, which if it does happen, you do get 60% of the votes. Like that is a massive catalyst for Florida. You know, how would you play that going up to it? And what I mean by that is, like, you know, are you selling into some of these like re-rates? Are you buying when it's like dipping in, or are you just, you know, consistently buying when it's, you know, down? Are you taking any profits? Like how would somebody play into it? And I ask this question as somebody who's been a cannabis investor for quite some time now. You know, I've seen when a top-down catalyst like this materializes, it does like have a significant impact. But then I've also seen the rug pull scenario where, you know, you get this big hype, you then get this MSOS echo chamber on Twitter kind of coming in, then it kind of spills over, and it kind of gets ahead of itself, and then ends up being, your favorite term, a nothing burger. You know?
Actually, I want to answer that question with just one point that I forgot to mention, was that in this incredible run up that we had over, you know, the January, February period, the inflows into MSOS were breathtaking. Like, I mean, we were talking about giant inflow after inflow, which is a very virtuous cycle because MSOS piles that money back into the underlying stocks. So part of where we are today, where the price is more like meandering, is that we haven't seen inflows in a little while now, but we still see some pretty significant trading volume on MSOS. So to answer your question, I think what you want to do is understand that, look, this is a gamble. When you're betting on this binary outcome, you're gambling. And the polls ultimately are not going to give you a great reading. You know, each poll on its own is not worth that much. Now, one of the things people do is when the polling says something they don't like, they immediately look for reasons to dismiss it, right? Then they start talking about sample size and scientific methodology, and that's fine, right? That it's good to look into those things. But I noticed that when the poll is positive and it says what people want it to say, nobody ever talks about the methodology, right? I never hear anyone talking about the sample bias, you know, or the fact that it's only 1,000 people when it shows 65% support. So I think what you need to do then, you know, in terms of talk about the game plan, what you're looking to do is get paid well for the risk that you're taking. So if you look at, you know, a name that's going to be the biggest beneficiary, which would be Trulieve. And then if you want to take a couple of others, I would say Verano and Air. And then Cansortium would be, you know, the most pure play, most levered to Florida, you know, probably highest risk reward as well. Is that I would look at those and say, okay, when the sentiment is low, I'm going to take some money, and I've already put some money aside now, I'm ready to go, and I'm going to gamble it. And it is a gamble because I'm betting on, you know, a certain event. I'm going to put it into those names and I'm going to put that aside and wait. And part of that gamble is saying, okay, as we start nearing the event date, which is November, so, you know, we're about 6 months away, at a certain point, I'm going to start trimming that or selling it, right? So similar to what we saw with the April 1st, if the gains get pulled forward and people get excited about this again and it, you know, goes up 50% or, you know, whatever number you pick for yourself, you have to start playing into that. You have to start trading it. You know, you, if you're gambling, you can't put all your chips in and just leave them there. You have to be a little bit smart about that.
Got it. So just two things really quickly and we can wrap this part up. Number one, you said getting paid appropriately for the risk you're taking. I didn't know you could get paid for taking risk, first of all. Number two, you mentioned breathtaking inflows for MSOS. Now, I don't know if you have the numbers in front of you. If you don't, like, whatever, it is what it is. You know, what were the inflows? Like, how much is it in as a percentage to the, you know, the total AUM of MSOS? And the reason I ask is that because I did see that on Twitter quite a bit, being like, you know, people post, hey, this is how much, like, this is like, you know, there's X number of dollars going into MSOS, blah, blah, blah. Does it trickle immediately into, like, does Dan immediately buy as soon as the money comes in, or does he, like, you know, slowly drip it out? And the reason I ask that is that, like, you know, that's a good way to see if there is increased appetite of people actually looking at the stocks. Like let's say like $1 million comes in one day, which is a lot of money. But if that's not a significant amount in comparison to the to its AUM, like, is that really going to move some of these names? Because Dan, like, correct me if I'm wrong, holds basically like four or five names.
Well, he's definitely top heavy in the big five, but he was spreading the money around. And to answer your question, I actually tried to find Jungle Java had a really good summary a couple weeks ago of how much money had come in. And I had a hard time finding it. But I mean, there were days they were bringing in, you know, north of like $10, $20 million of inflows. And that getting deployed, you know, that day or the next day. So the money wasn't sitting. Right. And that was one of the criticisms that he should have tried to time the market more. But ultimately, that's not his job. You know, it's an ETF. His job is to track the underlyings.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is that because of how illiquid the underlyings are, it creates distortions in the market. Right. But that's a good that's a thing that people don't really complain about on the way up, because it creates these, you know, huge pops at the end of the day and gets everyone excited. Right. So the amount he was buying was definitely significant. And, you know, for the smaller names, what was happening was, yes, he's buying smaller amounts, but they're way less liquid, right? So when he's buying, you know, Grown Rogue, for example, which was a newer edition, he's going to help move the stock quite considerably, right? And so that's kind of what we were seeing happening while we were having the run-up. So to answer your question, I want to be buying these stocks. I want to be buying these stocks when MSOS isn't buying, right? I want to be buying when, ideally, when MSOS has some forced redemptions and has to sell. Now, we haven't seen that at all this year. We might not see that this year, right? But that's the ideal situation in terms of the risk is not changing. The risk is the same. But if I can buy at a lower price, then my risk reward is getting better, because I don't have a good way of quantifying the 60% risk other than polls, and polling is notoriously unreliable, right? So that's going to be, that's going to oscillate back and forth. And the appetite will oscillate back and forth. But what I can control is what price I buy at. And so that's what I look the most at. And the fact that when MSOS is not in the market, that's the best time that you want to be buying.
Got it.
So just to kind of keep rolling here. So talking about kind of where we are today, it's looking at, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly of the industry. So we're going to kind of weave in and out of this. So it's not going to be broken out that specifically. But what we're seeing right now is that we have some clear catalysts on deck, right? So the Florida ballot, we have a defined date for when that is, which is election day, right? So we know it's coming up. We have 6 months, and the rhetoric around that will start to heat up. The bad part, you know, we already spoke about is the, you know, the fact that we have to hit 60%, and it's very unclear if we'll hit 60%. And there's really, really no way to know until Election Day. There was actually a really interesting article, which I haven't seen anyone talk about yet, because maybe because it's not positive for cannabis, but it talks about what Latino and Black voters think about abortion and about cannabis. And the long and short of the article is that it might be surprising to some people, but a lot of Latino voters in Florida are really not in favor of both cannabis and abortion. And in fact, cannabis was polling lower. I think it was in the 30s for a lot of Latino voters. And now there's still a good chunk of undecided, to be clear. But I think that might be surprising for some people, is that, you know, one of the reasons that the Latin countries like Colombia and Mexico have had such a hard time progressing cannabis legislation is that there's a very deeply religious voter base there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are very anti-drug, and they view cannabis as a drug, despite the fact that, you know, so much cannabis comes out of Latin countries. And in Florida, like, there is a large base of very Christian Latino voters who might not look very favorably on abortion and cannabis. And I was just kind of quickly searching the demographics of Florida. It's about 25% Latino and about 15% Black. So the Black voters were overwhelmingly like 80 to 90% in favor of cannabis legalization. It actually might be a little bit lower. I'll double check. But the Latino voters were overwhelmingly against it, which I thought was pretty surprising.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, when you were reading those out for the Latin population, that to me makes a lot of sense. They're you know, Latin America is highly religious. Like, a lot of them are Catholics, a lot of them are Christians, and they do not like, most of them don't like drugs, and that's because of, you know, a lot of the harm and whatever has happened to their countries. So that to me definitely makes sense, and I can see that. So I wouldn't be too shocked at that.
Yeah, and just to pull it up here, it's from the Tampa Bay Times. And again, this polling, I would say, is very up in the air, guys, but just to get a sense of it directionally, 55% of white Floridians are in favor, 65% of Black Floridians in favor, but only 32% of Hispanics in Florida in favor of the cannabis amendment. So again, it's early days, you know, that's an Ipsos USA Today poll. But that's just, to me, that's the real ugly part of Amendment 3, which is the cannabis amendment, is that people don't really talk about it, but there's a large demographic, the second largest demographic in Florida, that could come out very strongly against cannabis. And the fact that abortions on the ballot might actually hurt us with that demographic, because they might come out specifically to vote against abortion, and they might also vote against cannabis while they're there, right? Yeah. So that's something that really concerns me. And there's really no solution to that. I mean, I think what you can take solace in is that the fact that Kim Rivers is spearheading this initiative means that the logistical support and the ground game is going to be as good as it can be. And clearly all of the operators are banding together. But that is the most problematic part of the Florida initiative that I've seen so far.
Does it say how many people were surveyed?
I'm sure it does, but I'm not even going to get into it. Because it's one, again, it's a survey, guys. Like, don't take any one survey too seriously, but notice the trends over time.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on, one of the other things is talking about, you know, the election coming up and rescheduling. Look, the good is that, in a weird way, I mean, Joe Biden needs help. like you can just tell his polling is terrible. You know, all of the issues from, you know, the issues they're having at the border to, you know, the multiple wars that are ongoing out of the country. And I think the fact that they keep sending kind of unlimited financial aid to places outside of the country, and the fact that, look, if he doesn't see rate cuts before November, he's going to be in a very painful economic position for the average person. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, that being said, the economy is still performing quite well. They clearly need some kind of distraction in order to be able to win at the ballot box in November. And cannabis has to be part of their formula, right? We're already seeing the message on it quite a bit. The bad is that we don't have transparency into what the DEA is doing. We don't know if it's going to be Schedule 3 like we want, or if it's going to be Schedule 2, which would be, you know, it would be horrible for the industry, obviously. And the issue is now that as we get kind of closer to the election, we're starting to run out of time for a proposed rule to hit before the election. And if that's the case, you know, if all we have is, a proposed rule and then a comment period, you know, there's a chance here that it doesn't get actually finalized before the election, which means that if Joe Biden loses the election, which there's at least a 50-50 chance, you know, the next guy coming in, which if it's not Joe Biden, maybe he stops that. Maybe he reverses it, right? So that's something that remains a risk. I think the challenging part about that for us as investors is how do we play that, right? And mm-hmm. I think that it comes down to exactly the same way I look at it with Florida, which is the reward essentially, the risk factor is essentially the same, right? There's nothing we can really do about that. So from the reward perspective, I think what we have to do is just try to pick our spots, try to be patient, depending on how much exposure you already have to the space, right? I already have a ton of exposure. So the way I'm looking at it is about 5 to 10% of what I already have invested in cannabis. I have about 5% in an account right now in US dollar cash. And if the prices get low enough, which they're not quite there yet, it's probably, you know, something like 20% lower from where we are today. You know, it's seeing MSOX somewhere in the threes, you know, in that 3, 350, you know, maybe a high threes. That's where, for me, I start getting interested in buying and dipping my toes back in again. Now, some of you might say, hey, that's way too conservative. That's, you know, we're still far off from that. And I would agree with you, we are. But again, I have enough exposure today, right? If we get rescheduling next week and things go bananas, well, you know, that is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. But I have my game plan ready to go. If we get, you know, people starting to throw the towel in, starting to be disappointed, if we get, you know, the broader market selling off because of interest rate fears, then I have the cash ready to deploy. And I'm almost exclusively going to deploy it in MSOX. So to answer your question, Abby, of where the money's going, it's going to go to something that's a short-term trading vehicle, something that's more leveraged. And that way I am limiting my downside. I can only lose what I put in. But potentially, as we start to heat up again towards the election, then that becomes a very good trading vehicle. And I don't really trade the core of the portfolio, but then I can use that as a trading vehicle. And by the way, the last couple months, the only real moves I made were buying Cansortium prior to April 1st. And I bought it at, you know, still lower numbers than it is today. And I traded MSOX. We had a sell-off in March. I bought not a huge amount of MSOX, but I did buy it. And then I trimmed it over the last few weeks. And every time I trimmed it, it kept going up and I felt like an idiot. But it was relatively small dollars in the context of my portfolio, like a couple of percent. And now looking at it, you know, I'm happy I did, right? Because now we've had a pullback and I did pretty well on that trade. So that essentially, in a nutshell, guys, is for me at least, the game plan going forward is try to be patient, try to pick the spots, and then try to be highly levered to what I feel are asymmetric upside opportunities.
This could be something not for this episode, but maybe something we talk either offline or do an episode on. I'm really interested in why you always choose MSOX, because I've always felt that like levered ETFs, or I've always read that levered ETFs are not a long-term buy and hold strategy, because of when they rebalance, you have tracking error. They don't accurately, you don't get the returns that you expect if you hold for a long period of time. But MSOX is something that you've held for like a long period of time. Like, does that come into your investment, like your due diligence when you're sort of buying this?
Yeah, no, it's actually a great point you're making. It's these levered ETFs are very bad for long-term investment, right? So, and I've learned that, and I've learned it the hard way. But as a short-term trading vehicle, they can be really good. So,
okay, so this is like a short-term thing. You're trading in and out of it.
Yeah, totally. And again, when I say short-term, like when I look forward to the election, that's 6 months away, right? So again, I if you buy it today, you're looking forward 6 months. I know that's not super short-term, but what you're betting on is from here until the election, this is going to become an issue. This is going to pick up. Sorry, it's going to become an election issue, meaning this is going to become something people talk about again. They're going to try to use this in some form or fashion. And the same way in January, people got really excited over no news, but something being rehashed. I think that has tremendous potential to happen again as you get closer to the election, right? Another good piece of news that we haven't really talked about is that Ohio, which legalized at the ballot last November, looks like it's on track for a accelerated starting date. So it looks like June 7th that they will start sales in Ohio with the existing medical operators. That's going to be really good for basically every MSO. But what that will also do is in a key swing state that's sort of like, you know, a light red state, you're going to have people talking about cannabis, right? And I just think there's a beautiful narrative here where you have Ohio, which will have sales starting in, you know, June, July, whatever, this summer, they're going to start talking about, hey, how does Ohio compare to Florida, right? And I think there's just tremendous opportunity for buzz to build again. And this is a cyclical thing, right? People get excited about this and they start looking forward and they start saying, hey, something's coming. And of course, you know, you have the opportunity at any time for rescheduling to drop, right? So that everyone has their eye on, but it's when things start getting hot, everyone starts thinking that someone knows something and something's coming. When things cool off and you start having big negative days, people feel the same way, right? And they get disgusted with the sector again, and they're more willing to drop, you know, or at least not buy when it goes down. They remember how much exposure they have on a big red day. So I've been trying to be very patient. I think I've actually done a pretty good job of being patient. But to your point about why MSOX, because it's trading money, it's gambling money. And I own a lot of the underlyings already, right? So I'm only talking about the 5% of the portfolio. If it keeps going down, maybe another 5%, right? But I'm not talking about 50% of the portfolio.
That makes a lot of sense.
So we talked about Ohio, you know, what that could do for the industry. I think another interesting tidbit is Delta 8. So we've talked at length about Delta 8 over the years, the impact it's having on the industry, the fact that, you know, it's kind of been eating away at legal sales, and it's kind of become this backdoor for cannabis in a lot of places. And look, I'll be very clear, you know, every time I go to Florida, one of my first stops is at a Delta 8 shop, right? And they don't even call them Delta 8 stores anymore. They're smoke shops or hemp shops, and Delta 8's kind of passe. They figured out that's really old. Nobody sells D8 anymore. It's moved on to HHC and THCA, and they've basically just figured out ways to mimic THC without even needing to do this Delta 8 stuff anymore. So I think that's a really big news story in terms of it's gone under the radar. You're seeing MSOs kind of joining and doing their own D8 brands, sort of, very quietly. But at the same time, you're starting to see more pushback against Delta 8, right? So you're starting to see situations where the public's more aware of this unlicensed thing happening, and, you know, it's being sold sometimes in unscrupulous ways. In Florida, out of the blue, last minute legislation, boom, they basically banned all Delta 8 products, right? There's potential for that to happen in more states, and you're seeing more of a crackdown on it. And that's something that I really didn't think was possible, you know, a year ago. So that actually could be a really big tailwind for the legal operators. Another thing I would say is in terms of attitudes changing, I just want to talk about New York real quick. So New York has obviously been a mess. you keep hearing how New York is probably going to turn the corner, but it really hasn't. And one of the recent things that happened was there was an article that kind of took the angle of, you know, private equity over social equity in New York. And they were talking about how Chicago Atlantic essentially struck a deal that was too good with the state of New York. And the angle was, hey, this big hedge fund, which they're not a hedge fund, but this big hedge fund is getting to get all this benefit, and social equity operators are left out in the cold. But the funny thing about this is that, you know, the reality is that the program was just so poorly structured and so flawed that nobody was willing to invest in the industry in New York. And, you know, famously, Ascend did a deal with MedMen, you know, was supposed to take that license. Then MedMen pushed back and, you know, saying, no, you're not closing on this because we want a higher price. And by the time, you know, all the litigation happened, Ascend said, yeah, never mind, we don't want this. And they walked away from it, right? Which in the rear view looks like a great decision. Verano also was supposed to buy Goodness Growth, walked away from that acquisition very clearly because New York just wasn't worth it. And kind of coming back to where we are today, you're finally seeing the governor and the mayor say, hey, we're going to crack down on these illegal stores. Right now, that's a lot of words. Let's see what they actually do. But I think you're seeing a vibe shift from the last couple of years where people have been, you know, anti-police and anti-enforcement. I think that's changing in a big way. And I think that because of issues like crime getting out of control, and just average people getting fed up with it and wanting to see, you know, rule of law, I think you're actually going to see the corner start to turn on enforcement. And again, it's New York, so who knows? But when I say enforcement, I mean, you know, if you want to sell weed, you know, in the park and you want to sell it to your friends, yeah, fine, right? I mean, that's part of legalization. In that, you know, small amounts, you know, it's just, you got to let it go. But for people to set up entire stores and be able to sell without a license, that's pretty crazy, right? You would never allow that in the alcohol industry or the cigarette industry. So I think that's actually a meaningful shift that's happening. And I think that that swing, the pendulum swinging the other way, is only kind of growing as we get closer to the election. And I think what you're seeing is that some of these very left-leaning politicians who kind of rode that wave of, you know, anti-police sentiment, I think that's going pretty hard the other way right now. And so I think that actually means that some of these programs, like in New York, might actually start to get cleaned up, and the operators there might actually have a shot. If, you know, again, if big if this happens, they might actually have a real shot of being able to run a store. And and again, that's who knows. But I think that's something that's a part of a larger political shift that's happening all over the country.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that too. And I mean, you know, we'll see how that plays out, right?
Yeah, totally. So talking about, you know, MedMen that I just mentioned, I mean, part of the ugly is that if we do not get some of these key catalysts that we're talking about, guys, we got a big problem on our hands. And this is the downside, right? So when you look at MedMen, it just filed for bankruptcy. So, I mean, what took so long, right? This is a deeply troubled company. I mean, the bottoming process is a lot longer than we might think. And there's a lot of stories like this where companies have managed to stick it through. And partially this potential panacea of Schedule III and new capital. And, you know, we haven't even talked really today about safer banking, but that's always seems to be a football that, you know, investors get enticed with. A lot of those things have allowed these companies to stay afloat longer than they should have. And this is, I'm saying there's a lot of other companies that probably should have gone under sooner that really didn't. Right. So I think these are important things to keep an eye on and understand that if we get Schedule II, for example, instead of Schedule III, we are in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
There's going to be a significant re-rating of companies, and a lot of companies that, you know, who are not truly operationally cash flowing, which there's only a handful of, are going to be in a very, very bad situation. And you're going to have to see major industry consolidation. And the ugly part of that, as we're going to see with the MedMen restructuring, is that the licensing structure makes it very hard to reschedule to restructure like you would in any other industry. So in MedMen's example, Tilray invested a huge amount of money buying the convertible notes of MedMen, right? I forget the exact number now, but I think it's like 150 or 200 million. Mm-hmm. Tilray should actually be the biggest beneficiary from MedMen going under, because they're first in line for secured credit. So they should be able to basically scoop this company up and now have ownership of this company. But when you look at it and think about it, one, they legally can't own the entity, right? Although they could do some kind of acreage type structure like Canopy did, right? Tilray US, something like that. But two, I don't think they'll be able to get the regulators on board with actually absorbing those licenses. And three, the cash burn on those assets is going to be so high that I don't even know if they'll want to, right? They'll have to put so much good money behind the bad money in order to take it down. So watching this restructuring process is going to be so interesting, because bankruptcy is not the end of it, right? It's the end of this form of the company, and it's the rebirth of the company in some new way that is going to be really, really interesting to see the cleanup process on MedMen. And unfortunately, guys, there's a lot of other companies in the industry that are going to have to deal with this reckoning, because the traditional markets are getting more competitive every day, right? Illinois is getting more competitive. Even New Jersey is getting more competitive. So where these companies are driving their majority of profits from is getting diluted every day. And if something doesn't change and there's not a major catalyst like rescheduling or like Florida flipping over, there is a reckoning coming for the industry, which is going to be very painful. Maybe that helps, you know, the GTIs of the world. But at the same time, you know, they're capped in all these states. There's only so many things they can do. So that's the ugly part of when we're deciding what to do right now. You really have to think about how much exposure you have and what you own and how protected those companies are on the downside if we don't get the news that we're looking for.
Yeah, and you know, MedMen in particular is quite interesting, because obviously it was one of the original cannabis companies. They have one of the most bizarre and convoluted cap tables I've ever seen, and like it's to the point where I remember people, you know, at interviews be like, "Oh, like, can you do cap table math? You know, try to find MedMen's cost base." And it was like they would build out Excel models to figure this out. So like I can only imagine how difficult this one's going to be.
That should be the CFA level 3 exam, is trying to restructure MedMen, honestly. I always say this, right? It's like I cut my teeth in terms of like understanding balance sheets and income statements in cannabis. And then I'm like, to me, it's like, oh, this is junior stock. So when I get really good, then I'm going to look at senior stocks, right? I'm going to look at Facebook and stuff like that. And every time I look at the bigger companies, I'm always like, wow, these are so much easier to read than cannabis. It's like the junior stocks, you have to be like an investigative journalist and you have to be like digging through all these layers of stuff. The bigger companies don't have this kind of level of craziness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's because they're well-oiled machines versus a lot of these junior cannabis companies. And that's notwithstanding like the big five, you know, they have massive consultant payouts, which you don't normally see in like a Fortune 500 company. Mm-hmm. And then write downs. You saw that a lot in the Canadian ones. But yeah, to your point, I mean, I think if you can confidently analyze a cannabis balance sheet, it's like going from reading, I don't know, Charles Dickens to a picture book when you go to something, when you go to like something more legitimate, you know?
And, you know, to your point though, even the big companies, I mean, they went public through RTO, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Not IPO. The only, actually funny enough, Ascend has pretty clean financials because they went public through IPO, right? And they were the last major MSO to go public before the window closed. And everyone else did RTO. So they're merging into a Canadian shell, right? So you know, a tech company doesn't have to do that, right? I mean, that the only one thing you see is SPACs, right? And that, yeah, that that's kind of dead. So anyway, to wrap it up here as we're coming to the end, we're at a very interesting time right now because I think a lot of hope was put on to the idea that by 420 we were going to see something. And the can had been kicked down the road from like mid-January to now, so 3 months. So people are starting to get very frustrated and realizing that, hey, it might not be the outcome we want. We had the last little tidbit of safe banking, stable coin legislation, packaging them together. That's not done. And I don't mean the politics part of it. I mean the news cycle of it. You're going to see that come up a couple times, I think, over the next couple months. But as you get closer to an election, nothing's going to happen, right? So will that happen? Will it not? I don't know. But it's not the end of us hearing about it. But you're starting to see that frustration creep in again. You're starting to see MSOS not having inflows. Starting to see on red days, people starting to get nasty with each other. What that means for me is have the cash ready, know what you want to buy, and sit and wait patiently. You know, I have my eyes on what I want. Mostly it's MSOX. You know, I could see it being the Florida operators if they pull back more. Specifically, I'd probably stick to Trulieve, Cansortium, maybe Air, maybe Verano, depending on the price. But, you know what you own, know where you want to add, know how much you want to add, and have your powder ready to go. Because sometimes, you know, the down days, it doesn't always last very long, right? Mm-hmm. So we know what the risk factors are. You know, keep your mind open to that. But I think there really is a tremendous even trading opportunity coming up if things keep trending downwards the way we've seen in the last few weeks. So that's where I want to leave it off for today. Abby, it was awesome having you back. It's nice to hear from you again. And I think that over the next few weeks, you know, we've got a lot of different conversations to have. But I'm curious to hear what the people think. CINpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time.
This podcast is a general communication and entertainment being provided for informational purposes only. It is educational in nature and not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment product, strategy, plan, feature, or other purposes. Any examples used in this podcast are generic, hypothetical, and for entertainment purposes only. None of Cannabis Investing Network or its affiliates are suggesting that the listener or any other person take a specific course of action or any action at all. Communications such as this are not impartial and are provided in connection with advertising and marketing of products and services. Prior to making any investment or financial decisions, an investor should seek individualized advice from a personal financial, legal, tax, and other professional advisor that take into account all of the particular facts and circumstances for an investor's own situation. By listening to this communication, you agree with the intended purpose described earlier. Opinions and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors.